Hello, everyone. This is Betsy Wurzel. You're a host of Chatting with Betsy on the Pastor Will Talk Radio Network, a subsidiary of Global Media Network, LLC, where our mantra is to educate, enlighten, and entertain. The views of the guest may not represent those of the host of the station. Folks, I have with me today a wonderful author and writer, number one best-selling, international bestseller, Stephanie Woodman. That last name is Woodman. And her book, folks, I don't even have enough words to tell you how I love this book. This book is so riveting. Stephanie has the talent to reach into the reader's soul and really touch your soul. And I just really felt such a connection with this book. And I'm going to tell you why before I introduce Stephanie. I did not know this when I received the book. In this book, my father's ship, the Bunker Hill, is mentioned. My father was on that ship. So I really did feel an emotional, personal connection to the story. And I love how Stephanie blends fiction and nonfiction, taking an event that happened and just doing the characters on the American side and Japanese side and the effects of war. And I just think it's a wonderful book. The book is Eye Contact Over Truk. It's spelled T-R-U-K. And let me tell you a little bit about Stephanie. Stephanie is an avid collector of experiences and a perpetual student of life. She was a chemical engineer, and she had a short term as a high school math teacher. She likes to go scuba diving, and we're going to find out that's how she came up with the story. And she likes to sail and golf and play pickleball. And I just think Stephanie is terrific, and I want to welcome Stephanie Woodman to Chatting with Betsy. Welcome, Stephanie.
Well, thank you for having me, Betsy, and thank you for that introduction. That was quite something. We've exchanged a few text messages since we got started, and it's lovely to actually be able to talk and hear your voice in person.
Oh, it's great to hear your voice. Yeah, it's so funny. I think, well, I don't like my own voice. So when people say they like to hear my voice, that makes me happy. Your book, Stephanie, is just so emotional in a good way, and it so touches the soul. I just love the characters, but we'll ask you. I think I might have ADHD. I bounce all around in the interview. what inspired you to write this wonderful book?
this story started in 1996. I was on a scuba diving trip to Micronesia. We went over there with some friends. We all went, there were friends from work, we were all just taking a vacation to tropical paradise. We were going to spend a week in Truk, diving there, and then a week in Palau, and then back to the real world. And so I went over there naively just thinking, wow, this is great. Shipwrecks, it's adventure, it's tropical paradise, relaxation, this is great. And my first dive down was into a ship through a hole brought about by a torpedo. And I entered the ship to a blown out engine room. And that's when my naive view of the vacation changed very rapidly. And I began seeing in my own head, I could almost imagine what brought that ship down. I mean, this is a huge hole, big cavernous engine room. This thing was going to go down like a rock. And the rest of the week, in more and more dives, I would go into planes, and there would be tanks on the deck and field artillery and China cups and sake bottles and some bones and, you know, missile, 18-inch shells that were destined for the Yamada. And it became clear I was in a ghost town. This was still a tomb. And it became surreal. I was on a liveaboard dive vessel, which features heavily in this book. In fact, a tremendous amount of this book is true, because a lot of it came from my vacation. And while on board that ship, there were 3 Japanese, 4 German, a couple from England, a lady from Scotland. And there's a scene in the book about the character Sarah, who, by the way, Sarah is the only real person in the book, because Sarah is me. I had to put me in there because those were my thoughts going through my head as I experienced all this. And the captain of the dive vessel that I was on popped in the newsreel video of the actual bombing. And I was the only American who went to the salon that night. My friends were all in their cabins or whatever. And the 3 Japanese were there, the 4 German boys were there, and then the girl from Scotland was there. And at the end, this room was total silence, because we'd all been having this lovely vacation together until we had this rude awakening of the reality of the attack, the bombing, and the sinking of all these ships. And at the end of the video, one of the German boys popped up. Well, that was propaganda. And then they went off and partied. And that made me stop to think, well, on the one hand, it was propaganda. It was, those newsreel videos were intended to not only notify people of what was going on, but to bolster the Americans' support, you know, rah-rah allies, that our guys were fighting hard and that we were winning and things of that nature. It was meant for that. But it was also interesting to me how someone, a young person from Germany or Japan, would see the war from their side. So perspectives, you know, started coming into my brain. And then I was told a tale, and it was a tale that I did try very hard to validate, but was unable to. And the tale was that later in life, an American pilot came back to dive on a ship he sank and died during the dive. And that, from that moment on, haunted me. So and I did not have a creative writing background at all, but the tale haunted me. So a few years later, 2000, I actually wrote a first draft. But I would go to local airports and war museums and so forth, and I came across a pilot who was a fighter pilot from World War II. His name is Bill. He had never been to truck, but truck, troop, it goes, you know, it's pronounced those ways anymore. Mm-hmm. But I started talking to him about the idea behind the book, the thoughts behind the book, and he was so generous to share his own personal experiences, his training. It was via him that I even found out about the aircraft carrier training program that existed in the Great Lakes. That's all true, too. And I knew nothing about what was called the Corn Belt Fleet. So Bill shared so much of himself, and like I said, Bill was wonderful. We had many, many conversations. But I put it away because the book wasn't ready. I wasn't a writer yet. I didn't know what I was doing, didn't have a clarity of it, and so I put it away. And the following 20 years, you know how 20 years brings, well, let's just call it
yes.
Life. And so I, like everyone else, had 20 years of life. And so, but the idea of the book never left. It continued to haunt me. And I finally kind of made a decision when my son went off to college. I at that point had retired from teaching and had a long talk with myself. It's like, okay, this is now 24 years. It's time to do something or forget it. And so I took it back out and started down a very fascinating path to ultimately this story.
That's I bet you're glad that you wrote it. Did you expect it to be an international bestseller?
No. I have not expected at all the reception that it's received and the reach. I've had emails from people in Japan, in New Zealand, Australia, England, as well as here in the States. It's amazing. It's almost like watching a child that you've grown and you've launched into the world, and you're watching, you know, what they end up doing with their life. I feel that's the way with this book. It's been fascinating to see where it's gone and how people have reacted to it. And so far, the reaction has been amazingly supportive.
Well, there's definitely a lot to discuss about your book, and I have to say the cover of your book is just fascinating, to how you had the clouds, the eyes, you know, someone intensely looking, and then you had the island, and you could see like a wreck in the ocean. This book brings out so much, Stephanie, of that people don't realize the devastation of war, the PTSD that people have on both sides of the war, the different perspectives that you have in this book with the American soldier and someone who's Japanese, whose dad had served, and the young man is feeling the effects of what his father went through and is angry at, you know, Americans for what they did. And I'll tell you, it's really, you know, it's something. My dad, I have to share this story. As I told you, my dad was in the war, and I wanted a Honda. That's my first car I wanted, was a Honda so bad. And he said to me, I'm not having no Japanese car parked in front of my house. So,
oh, wow.
I was mad, you know, because I really wanted that. And then later on, this is what's funny. Later on, my dad buys a Toyota. And a Japanese TV. And I never thought, ever, that I think he would buy a Japanese car. And that was why I bought my car in 1979. And he still, at that, many years later, was not going to, you know, he wouldn't think about buying one at that time. So people do change. The point I'm trying to bring out, they do change their perspectives. I like how you created the characters. I always ask the authors this because everyone is so different. What is your creative process like? Do you have the characters already in your mind? And do you get the dialogue as you go along? Or do you already have it in your head? Because that amazes me.
The title of the book is Eye Contact Over Troop. However, when I first wrote it, the title was going to be Eye Contact, and that's it. So when I talk about the book, I always say eye contact. No, eye contact was an evolution. It started with the tale of this one guy, and even then, the first draft had him dying, but I didn't want him dying. When I pulled it back up 20 years later, I didn't want him dying, because if he died, we would never know why. It could have just been he had a diving accident. He penetrated a ship, you know, kicked his fins, silted the place out, couldn't find his way. You know, could have been just an accident. So, but if he died, then his voice dies. So the story started with him. But then, again, at the same time, I'm learning how to be an author, how to write stories. And so it was through a kind of series of reviews. Sorry, I'm getting a spam call here. Through a series of reviews of back and forth of people reviewing it and giving me comments that the other characters began to pop themselves out. And Junichi was the second real character. A very good friend of mine, she was the very first person who read the new version. And she gave me some wonderful feedback. And one of it, she said, you've got to do something with Junichi. Junichi at that point had just been someone on the dive vessel, similar to the Japanese couple that was on my vacation. And so I started thinking about, she said, you know, Junichi is going to be a good character. You need to do something with him. And so as I started evaluating where he should go, my first thought was he could have been somebody who had been on the opposite side of the battle at Truk. But that didn't pique my interest because I thought in some cases that's too obvious. And then I thought, well, the son's perspective, and the son is so important in Japanese culture, that the son's perspective would be interesting. And so then he had to have his own story. So outside of the battle. But yet his father still had to live. So that I wanted to tell the story of what happened at Truk after the battle and those 2 years of horrid experiences. So that's how Junichi then, and so of course that took me down a whole path of researching what life would have been like for a child in Japan during the war, and hence the firebombing and so forth. Well, Junichi has to have a full life. So Junichi's married, and so his wife, Shoko, ultimately had her own story, kind of a mini story in the book. And Sarah, again, who is my character, Sarah had to be in the book because those were my thoughts. So her character was the easiest of all the characters to write, obviously. And
go ahead.
Okay, and then the last character to come in was Natalie's character. Well, the last two characters. Natalie's character was one of the second to last character. Someone, again, else who read it and said, well, you need to have more females. It's like, more females? Okay. and I had just mentioned Natalie in brief passing, as the sister of someone who's referenced in the book. And then I started really thinking about that, and that brought one more perspective. She represents the family of the family that lost someone who was never able to come back home for burial. And
yes,
then, of course,
that was.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then,
that
of course,
was.
The Islanders' perspective
that got me.
Had to come out.
Yes. There's so many wonderful characters in your book with such depth to them. You know, the main character, Nick, I don't like to give too much of the book away, Stephanie, because I want people to pick it up, but him and his wife, and in losing his wife, which is what inspired him to go to the island. And he had a lot of emotions and guilt to sort out in his life. I mean, I can't even imagine, and this is what your book brings out, which I really admire, what the pilots went through. You know, these pilots are serving their country, They don't have a choice. That's what they're told to do. They have to drop bombs. And I can't even imagine the stress of that. Plus, you're having the other planes, right? Excuse me.
Right.
The Japanese at that time, that's where who he was fighting, trying to kill you as you're dropping the bombs. And the ships, you know, shooting at you. I mean, so when a plane went down, there was a lot of men on board. And, you know, and you feel guilty, especially if you survived the crash. Survivor's guilt. It's a real thing, folks. It's a very real thing. Excuse me. You know, why did I survive? And I, this is only my perspective, Stephanie. I think for the pilots to survive mentally, to do that job, they have to cut a certain part of themselves off. They can't think about what they're doing because they have to do it. That's just as, you know, who would be so-called normal after that? I don't think you can be.
Right. That's one thing that I definitely, in all the research, came across. You shut down the the emotions. You almost become robotic. And if you don't, then you're the next victim.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, at that time, post-World War II, even during World War II, they didn't have psychiatric treatment. Didn't talk about it. These men came home and did not talk about what they went through. And I could relate to Nick because he lost his spouse. I lost my spouse. And you feel like, what's your purpose? You know, you sometimes think, well, what do I do now? And who am I now? And, you know, you bring that perspective to Nick's character. And, folks, you might think this sounds woo-woo. I related to Nick with a lot because he felt that his wife was with him when he was diving. And I could believe that because I feel like my husband is with me in a lot of ways. And I really, you know, liked how you did that when Nick was diving, that he felt his wife's presence. I cried a lot during the book too, but that's because I'm an emotional person. But and not that the book is sad, folks. It's not. It's very riveting. I think it's inspiring. I felt inspired. You really feel for these people, and you could understand why Junichi was angry when he found out that Nick was part of the bombing. But he didn't understand. You know, as a child, you don't understand. When I was a child, the Vietnam War was going on. I didn't understand it. I wasn't interested in what was going on. And, you know, I can't even picture living in a war zone, being firebombed. And you could, you know, understand the anger of both sides. Now, I'll play devil's advocate here. Somebody might say, well, you know, he had no right to be angry because Japan started the war. But he was a child. He didn't have anything to do with the war. The people living on the main island have nothing to do with it. I mean, it's the governments. When the governments decide, hey, we're going to war, that's it. I remember watching the Band of Brothers, and one of the guys they interviewed said, you know what? If it wasn't for the war, I could have been friends with that guy. Mm-hmm. Even though they were German, we could have been friends. But because, you know, the war, of course, you know, they couldn't be. But that was just, you know, you don't think of the enemy as having a family, as maybe they don't want to be fighting either.
Right.
You know, and your book brings a lot of that up, that I think people don't think about, say, when they watch a war movie. And back then, excuse me, my mom, she was a teenager when the war broke out, a preteen and a teenager. They didn't know what was going on back then, except I think mm-hmm. when they went to the movies, they had those newsreels that they showed. They didn't know. They had no idea what was going on. And it was very closed information. Like the letters that they sent home were checked. You couldn't say certain things. You couldn't say where you were, what you were doing. My dad had old letters he wrote to his parents. And some of the stuff you could see was blocked out.
Uh-huh.
So, so you didn't, they didn't have no idea. Unless, of course, you lived through it. And I just think your book brings up so many different topics that people don't want to discuss, but it needs to be discussed. And that's one of the many things I loved about your book, because you bring it up. The my mind just went blank. The person who lost their brother. What was her name?
Natalie.
That's it. She lost her brother. Her family had no closure. They had no body. Mm-hmm. They had no cemetery to go to. And Nick felt guilty about her brother. Mm-hmm. And, it's like you think, well, I was on that ship. Why did they die and I didn't? You're in a foxhole. Why did that person die and I didn't? And mm-hmm. you hear that all the time. Or someone who was captured. If you were a prisoner of war, they had guilt too. They were captured. And some people look down on that. It's nothing to be ashamed of at all.
Right.
If you were a prisoner of war, I mean, that's part of being a war. There are prisoners. And I just think your book is so rich in history. I know I had told Stephanie folks before the interview, I never heard of this island, Truk, T-R-U-K. My father never talked about being over there. Excuse me. So I did not, I was shocked. And a matter of fact, because of you, Stephanie, I learned a lot, because you, in your book, you mentioned about a YouTube video. And I went and I went on YouTube and I watched about the battle.
Mm-hmm.
And to learn more, and wow. Kudos to you. Really.
Well, thank you. It was
this book.
Truk was a major, major Japanese base. In fact, Admiral Nimitz referred to it as Japan's Pearl Harbor when we were able to, catch them by surprise, which was shocking in of itself. And it was the event that I don't cover it inside Eye Contact. I do cover it in a smaller little short story that I've got that talks about the two-day battle. And it talks about some of the things that happened that allowed us. And these were like quirks of fate that allowed us to catch them by surprise and annihilate the base in, like I said, a mirror image of the attack on Pearl Harbor. And it's up until that point, the shroud surrounding Truk was, they called it the Gibraltar of the Pacific. The fear in the men when they heard that they were going to finally go into Truk was real. Because the sailors wrote that they, as soon as they heard Truk, their stomach just dropped, going, oh God, we can't go into Truk. And so there was this immense shroud of secrecy and and, you know, anticipation, because it really was the home of the Japanese combined fleet. But again, quirks of fate, very similar to the quirks that allowed Japan to come in and attack Pearl Harbor, happened, and we were able to go in and annihilate the base and, you know, just got rid of 5 airstrips and sunk, oh, God, how many? Almost 50 ships, I think, that are there. So it was, when you really get into, like, the history of some of the things that had to happen that turned the tides of war. Midway is well known. Truk was another one, because Truk was so centrally located that it was able to provide defense for so many areas. So that's why it had to be taken out. So it's really been fascinating research, that's for sure.
I can imagine. How long did it take you to research for this book?
Well, that's an interesting question because, again, since the first draft was in 2000, technically, research started in 1999. And my first draft, like I said, was in 2000, and I was talking to Bill during that whole time and going, but since even from that moment on, I would go to, like, you know, air shows and talk to other pilots or listen to them speak. And once, you know, the internet came on, I would research over time and look at videos and get more in depth about, you know, especially from the attack on Truk. I got much, much more information on that. Then, like I said, once my son went to college and I retired, I had all the time in the world to get in deeper and deeper. And so then once, like, Junichi's character popped up, then I had to go in deep research on what his childhood would have been like. And then that, and you know that once you start looking up something on the internet, it's an endless rabbit hole. It just takes you different tunnels. Oh, this is interesting. I'll go here. This is interesting. Go there. And so then, like for Nick, his character, yes, he loses his wife and he loses his friend. And so, you know, losing his friend in a training accident, that was a version of a story I heard from a veteran years ago that he experienced watching the guy in front of him take off and crash, and he just had to go immediately thereafter. And the reality of that would be necessary is obvious. The emotional aspect of having to do that was mind-boggling to me, you know.
Yeah. I agree.
So I can't just say that this book took 2 years of research because it was spread out over a 24-year period of time.
Wow. Excellent job. And I like how you brought out also with Natalie's character of her, you know, with the brother, but there was someone, now with the Natalie's husband, have PTSD. He was also in the in that war and served over there. Or am I confusing her with another character?
Yeah, I had him be a veteran from Okinawa.
Yes, okay. So she talked about his difficulties. And mm-hmm. he was, you know, depressed. And he, an alcoholic. He had mm-hmm. trouble with, and made me think of my father-in-law. And it really brings home the reality of war. And mm-hmm. it just doesn't go away, folks, when people come home from war. It stays with them for the rest of their life. And this book brings that out. I highly, highly recommend this book. It is fascinating. If you know anyone interested in history, buy them this book. Eye Contact Over Truk, T-R-U-K. It's really amazing job, Stephanie Woodman. Kudos to you. And you know what? You are an inspiration, Stephanie, because here you were retired, and you became a number one international bestseller. That is an inspiration for those who were on the fence of, okay, what do I do when I retire? Oh, I want to write a book. Nah, maybe I shouldn't try. Hey, folks, you want to write a book? Write one. You don't know. You could become a number one bestseller, too.
The journey has been, the journey to it has been so much fun. Now, that does not mean there are not periods where I thought, I can't do this. I'm total white. You know, this is useless. I'm going to be horrible at this. There certainly were, but I kept, because the story haunted me, it forced me to keep going. And I'm so happy it did, because it opened up an entire new world for me that would never, it never crossed my mind that this is something I could actually have done. So for anybody who is, you know, retired and doesn't know what they want to do or what they can do, this thing ended up for me sending me off on multiple different directions. So what I got to say is, you know, don't worry about failure. Just try and let the path take you where it's supposed to take you. And there's, it's been fun just doing it.
I just want to mention there's a mystery in this book. There's a mystery mm-hmm. going on. And I just found that I had trouble putting the book down. I'm up 2, 3 o'clock in the morning reading this book. Excuse me. I couldn't put it down. And I have a lot of books. I try to read, you know, books for when I do interviews, because I feel like I could give a better interview if I read the book. And I was thinking, this book is just incredible. And I'd like to read what you're going to come out with next. Are you working on another book, Stephanie?
I am. this is another historical fiction, and it will be placed entirely during World War II, and will also have dual perspectives.
Wow.
This one will involve a nurse and another perspective, for which I'm not going to divulge yet. And I'll just say this, that I did not think I would ever be able to write this story until somebody who read my book contacted me. And after that, I've been able to talk to this person multiple times. They're my sounding board, and I can write this story now. And I'm extremely excited by it.
Oh, well, that sounds good. You gave a tease, and you know where I am, Stephanie. You can contact
I'm
me.
I'm going to
you. I would love that, because actually, I always loved reading about nurses. I was a nurse, and I always liked reading about nurses that were on the battlefield. I read a really great book, no, I can't think of the name of it because I read it a long time ago, about a true story about nurses in the battlefield, World War II, over in Africa, in Italy. Well, over when they were serving over at that time in World War II, and, you know, what they went through. So I'd be looking forward to reading your book. I love talking to you, Stephanie. Where can people find your book?
It's actually out everywhere. That being said, most places you can find it online. Physical copies you can get from Amazon and a lot of bookshop.org, which also helps facilitate a lot of independent bookstores. Barnes & Noble's you can get it through online. Most retailers you can get the e-copy. It's
that flavor. How can people connect with you, Stephanie, to comment, to let you know how awesome your book is?
For which I would be extremely appreciative of comments. I've learned early on to take all comments, even criticism, ended up being so helpful because every ounce of criticism I ever got in my review copies led to a far better book. So that was nice. WoodmanBooks.com is the website that I have for my writing, and people can, on there is a contact tab, and people can email me via WoodmanBooks.com is the place to find me.
Oh, great. Folks, I'm telling you, this book is phenomenal, and when you read it, you will know why it is the number one international bestseller. Stephanie Woodman, that's WOODMAN. The book is Eye Contact Over Truk, TRUK. It is a fascinating book. I would like to see it made into a movie. I could picture that made into a movie.
So would I.
It is riveting. I just loved it. And congratulations and best wishes. I know your other book will be, I'm sure, will be another international bestseller because you just have a talent of capturing the reader and just, I felt the emotion of every character. I mean, this, I felt like I was there. I felt I was in the ocean. I felt like I was scuba diving with them. I felt like I was right there when it happened. There's a lot in this book, folks. I don't like to give the book away. All I want to tell you is buy it, and you'll see for yourself how wonderful this book is. And I just think it's, you know, kudos to you. And, you know, you mentioned about don't being, be afraid of failure. You know what, folks? I'll tell you what. When you don't try, that's where your failure is, not trying. Because when you try, you write a book or you're going to create something, you learn from your mistakes. Every great creator, everybody who owns a company has made mistakes. Inventors, they learn from their mistakes. So don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of trying. Because if you don't try, if you want to write a book and you don't try, you're going to regret it. So try it. And, you know, I know a lot of publicists. I know marketing people. So if you need resources, just let me know. And I can recommend people to you if you want to get into the book writing side. But thank you so much, Stephanie, for writing this book and coming on my show with me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Betsy. Thank you so much for having me. This was lovely to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Folks, all the information about Stephanie Woodman will be in the blog that Jeannie White, who's the station manager, writes, and Jeannie produces the show. So please read the blog. Please share the show with other people to help them and to just gain knowledge. I learn from every single guest that comes on my show. I learn from every book that I have read. And I'm grateful of what I do because I get to learn a lot, meet wonderful people. And I want to thank Lillian Caldwell, who's CEO of Passion World Talk Radio Network, who makes this all possible. And if you don't already subscribe to Chatting with Betsy, please do so. It is for free. I'm on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, to name a few. And I just want to reach as many people as possible. So I need your help. So please tell your friends about Chatting with Betsy, because I have a lot of great guests coming on. I have they're experts in their field, and I just want to be a resource. I'm here to help people. And as I always say at the end of my show, in a world where you could be anything, please be kind and shine your light bright, because we need it now more than ever. And if you want to follow me, I'm on Facebook, Betsy E. Wurzel, W-U-R-Z-E-L. And that's all I have to say today, folks. Thank you again. Until we chat again, be safe. This is Betsy Wurzel. You're our host of Chatting with Betsy on Passionate World Talk Radio Network, a subsidiary of Global Media Network, LLC. Bye-bye now.